Welcome to Crossroads, a podcast that explores the intersection of faith and Christian living. Crossroads is part of the media ministry at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. Get to know us by visiting us online at fapc.org.
Hi, I'm Jamie Staley, Director of Christian Education here at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. And I am excited to be sitting down with Dr. Ryan Jackson this afternoon. He is our director of music. Oh boy, with the William S. Perper.
The longest title.
Director
in the world.
Of music. Is that
it's
right?
Close, yeah, it's the William S. Perper Director of Music and Fine Arts Ministries.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Here at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. And we are sitting down to talk about his upcoming concert, which I am really excited for, Of Voice and Verse. This title tells me absolutely nothing about what the concert is about. So I just wanted to sit down with you and just have a conversation about the concert, about where this idea came from, about the type of music, the composer, and kind of what you all have been working on. So very first... What is the concert about? Of Voice and Verse.
Yeah, so it's a choir concert, just to be clear. It's not an organ concert, although there is organ playing with the choir, but it's a choir concert. And basically, the idea came to me because I've always been really fascinated by the relationship between lyrics and music. I think about it all the time. And since I was a very young kid, I've always had like a weird memory for lyrics. Like people are always amazed. I can like really randomly, once I've heard lyrics to music, I never forget them. And so it's been very useful as a church musician to have that skill because, you know, when I receive, a sermon title and a reading from scripture or whatever, I almost instantly, like all the hymn texts come to my mind that are associated with the theme or the exact scriptural reference. And also, you know, anthems that the choir will sing and all of that, like all of that just sort of starts percolating in my head. So I've always been fascinated by the relationship between poetry and music and what happens when they're combined. Because of course, like poetry and music each on their own are already beautiful art forms. But I think a lot of people would agree that when they combine, they sort of become even more than the sum of their parts. You know, they become something even more special. And so that's what this concert's about. It's literally music that sort of dwells on that question or on that theme. It's all music thinking about the relationship between text and music.
Sad.
And so, that's sort of the main thrust of the theme that holds the whole program together.
So how did you decide which pieces were going to be within this entire concert?
So there's actually like quite a bit of choir music that's been written about, you know, the relationship between text and music. And so I was sort of, it was a harder job to narrow down really what to do rather than like find stuff on the theme. Because sometimes it's tricky when I set myself a theme for a program. Sometimes I have the opposite problem where I'm sort of trying to go through all this, this music and do really, you know, obscure searches trying to fill the program with music on the theme. But in this case, I sort of had this huge list of music that came to mind, music that I love and music that fit the theme. And I actually just spent a lot of time sort of paring it down and trying to sort out like what would make a cohesive and beautiful program. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I sort of got fascinated with while I was thinking about this program was Saint Cecilia, who's the patron saint of music. And there's been a lot of poetry written about her. And she sort of had an interesting life. She was a martyr, an early Christian martyr. And there's this line in the text that tells us about her life that basically says, like, as she's being martyred, she was singing to the Lord in her heart. And so she became like the patron saint of music.
Okay.
And there's all these beautiful images of Saint Cecilia, you know, playing her organ or playing other instruments and things like that. So that sort of was like one of the ideas that came to mind. And so three of the pieces on the program deal explicitly with Saint Cecilia specifically. And the first one is called Hymn, I have to say, think of this carefully, because the two titles are actually very similar. The first piece on our program is called A Hymn for St. Cecilia, and that's by the British composer Herbert Howells. And it sets a poem by a woman named Ursula von Williams. Mm-hmm. And anybody who knows something about music, English music especially, will know the name von Williams, because Ralph von Williams, Rafe von Williams, as they'd say, is a very famous British composer. He wrote symphonies, tons of choral music. Anyway, his wife was a poet, and she wrote this beautiful poem called A Hymn for St. Cecilia, which Herbert Howells set in 1960 for a special St. Cecilia Day service. And it's really lovely. And it's the poetry for that one is very like traditional, like thinking about like St. Cecilia as being sort of youthful and, you know, the spring and the flowers and all this like really positive sort of imagery and sort of like stereotypical, you know, imagery about music being like life-giving and joyful and spring-like, you know? And so she starts out like, sing for the morning's joy, Cecilia, sing in words of youth and praises of the spring. Walk the bright colonnades by fountain spray and sing as sunlight fills the waking day. So you can sort of get this like idea of what that's like.
Yeah.
The other major piece on the program dealing with this is by another British composer called Benjamin Britten. And his is called A Hymn to St. Cecilia. So you see, we have a hymn for St. Cecilia, and then we have a hymn to St. Cecilia. And Britten's hymn to St. Cecilia is a completely different vibe. So we've got this like spring-like take, you know, of the Ursula von Williams text versus a poem that Britten commissioned from his friend W.H. Auden, another very famous British poet in the 20th century. He specifically commissioned Auden to write this ode to St. Cecilia that he could set to music. And they, Auden and Britten collaborated a number of times throughout both of their careers and kind of had an on-again, off-again relationship personally. They got into all sorts of like famous fights where they'd cut each other off for long periods of time. Then, yeah, very juicy. But his hymn to St. Cecilia is much more mystical. You know, it deals much more, it's much more balanced, sort of like Saint Cecilia sort of as a spiritual muse and a source of inspiration for artists, both poets and musicians. And so it's more of like an internal spiritual thing, whereas, you know, the Von Williams text is sort of this, like I said, this spring awakening sort of almost like Greek goddess sort of feeling. The Auden is a much more introspective thinking, sort of meditating on like the source of inspiration for artists and like when that, you know, internal impetus to create happens, like where does that come from? And the Britten was written earlier than the Howells. It was written during the Second World War. And so there's a lot going on. And so Auden's text, you know, starts out sort of in a similar way as the von Williams. It starts out with like this garden imagery. The opening verses are, in a garden shady, this holy lady with reverent cadence and subtle psalm, like a black swan as death came on, poured forth her song in perfect calm. And by ocean's margin, this innocent virgin constructed an organ to enlarge her prayer. And notes tremendous from her great engine thundered out on the Roman air. So it starts out in the same sort of way, but he sort of takes it further and, like I was saying before, turns it into a meditation on the artist as an individual. So he takes it from this like person that is St. Cecilia to sort of like the inner spiritual muse that is the source of creative, the creative impetus, you know, and it sort of gets dark at one point where, let me see here. I'm just looking at the lyrics. Yeah, and it's definitely like sort of a more of a reference to what's going on in the world that time in World War II. And oh, dearest children, casual as birds, playing among the ruined languages, so small beside their large, confusing words, so gay against the greater silences of dreadful things you did. Oh, hang the head, impetuous child with the tremendous brain. Oh, weep, child, weep. Oh, weep away the stain. Lost innocence who wished your lover dead. Weep for the lives your wishes never led. And so it sort of goes to that place of, like, you know, human ingenuity gone wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, which was really interesting to me that, you know, because you sort of have this whitewashed version of like a Saint Cecilia image where it's all about, you know, the spring flowers and the wonderful this and that. But we also know, looking at history, that human brilliance and human creativity can also go wrong and be sort of pointed in the wrong direction. And we create things like bombs and guns and, you know, and create all sorts of conflicts for ourselves through our creative powers gone wrong. And so that contrast was really interesting for me. So those two pieces stand as sort of pillars in this program for me. Mm-hmm. And those are sort of like, as I said, really well-known British composers. We're also looking at some wonderful American music. We've got a newer piece by a famous American composer called Eric Whitaker, who's really well-known in choral circles for writing this really lovely atmospheric music. He's really good at creating these like tonal landscapes. And so he also commissioned, like Britain commissioned Auden, Whitaker works with this wonderful poet, modern, they're both still alive and relatively young guys. His name is Tony Silvestri, I think is his name. I'm not seeing it here right now. But anyway, they worked together on a lot of projects, and Whitaker actually commissioned him to write a new poem for this piece. And he came up with something called Her Sacred Spirit Soars. And it also is an ode to Saint Cecilia. But what's interesting about it is that Silvestri decided to write it in the form of a traditional Shakespearean sonnet. Mm-hmm. So it's got 14 lines and it's divided into like eight and six, I believe. And he also set himself the added job of making it an Elizabethan ode, which was sort of common in those times. And they would always end with this this cry, long live fair Oriana, which is a call out to Queen Elizabeth I. And so what's really interesting is that he made this poem an acrostic of Hail Fair Oriana. So if you read the poem, every line, the beginning of every line spells out Hail Fair Oriana. That's and cool. It's 14 lines in a Shakespearean sonnet. So it's like a huge accomplishment of poetic brilliance. And it's such a wonderful, evocative poem. It's her sacred spirit soars or gilded spires and breathes into creative fires of force. In well-tuned chants and chords of countless choirs lives her ever her immortal shadowed source. From age to age, the role of poets grows, and yet a lonely few are laurel-crowned. In whose sweet words her inspiration shows revealing, insights deep and thoughts profound. Oh, shall Cecilia or shall goddess muse reach then to me across the eternal skies? And it goes on from there. But so that's sort of like a modern take on an ode to Saint Cecilia. And so I thought those three pieces are sort of our centerpiece in terms of that. And then we have a couple of other perspectives as well. Two Canadian pieces. There's one of them is Thou Whose Harmony is the Music of the Spheres, which I think this is a wonderful sort of Unitarian Universalist text by a minister in that tradition from earlier in the 20th century. And this is just sort of more of a meditation on the music of the spheres and sort of harkening back to this ancient idea that the universe and the world are all sort of vibrating at certain frequencies, you know, and when things are harmonious, things are going well. And when things are not, you know, out of tune or dissonant, things start going wrong. And so that really spoke to me. And I thought that brought sort of another interesting perspective to this, to the theme. And then the other Canadian piece is called Morning Hymn, which is written by the Canadian composer Ryan Murray. Patrick Murray, excuse me, Patrick Murray. And it's not Ryan. I'm Ryan. Patrick Murray. And that was actually written as a piece to honor my organ teacher at her retirement from the director of music position at Metropolitan United Church in Toronto. Oh,
cool.
Yeah. And that church has a resident poet who's a member, and her name's wow. Patricia Orr. And so she was commissioned to write the poem for that. And that's a really lovely meditation on music and words as well. And I'll just read you a couple of lines of that one just to sort of whet your appetite. It goes, first voice of dawn, last carol of the evening sun, through time eternal and what may gloriously be, you carry me, you speak my language, music. And so this is like, yeah, see, that's really lovely way to start out. And the music is, again, like it joins the text and I think elevates it in a way that's really beautiful. And then the choir really loves to sing it and we're really excited to share that. And then we round out the program with another barn burner from the British tradition called Blessed Pair of Sirens. And this is by a really famous late 19th, early 20th century British composer of choral music named Hubert Parry. And he wrote another really famous anthem called I Was Glad When They Said Unto Me, which anybody who is into choral music will be familiar with that. It's an amazing, amazing piece. It's been played at a lot of like royal occasions and whatever. But his other really big piece for double choir and organ is called Blessed Pair of Sirens. Mm-hmm. And this is, it sets an epic poem by Milton, who's a famous British poet from a few centuries ago. And it's sort of earlier language, like it's older English. Here are a few lines from it. Blessed pair of sirens, pledges of heaven's joy, sphere-born harmonious sisters, voice and verse, wow. Which is where the text title from the concert comes from. Wed your divine sounds and mixed power employ, dead things with inbreathed sense able to pierce. And so, again, it's another way of talking about the marriage of voice and verse, the marriage of poetry and music. And so it speaks, that text also speaks directly to the theme of the concert. And that's our big ending. It's a wonderful music with like, that one's all in eight parts. So the choir is divided into eight parts. It's very interesting textures, wonderful, regal, beautiful organ accompaniment, and I'm really excited about it. And we've had two rehearsals now with the choir. They're sounding absolutely fabulous already, and it's just going to be, I think, a really beautiful and exciting program.
Awesome. It sounds like it's going to be really amazing. I was going to ask where the title came from.
Yes.
So I'm glad to hear that it came from this. You know, I didn't know anything about St. Cecilia until just now.
Mm-hmm.
It's what a beautiful way that to remember someone who is a martyr through this, you know, through this music and through thinking of her as this this saint of music. I love that.
Yeah, and she's really like inspired like a lot of lore over the years, you know. So it's like, who knows like what exactly is historically true about her life at this point or anything, but you know, like so many painters have been inspired to try and, you know, capture her essence. And it's now really a lot more about what she represents,
yeah.
I would say, you know, to artists and especially musicians and poets. And I just think it's perfect for this, for this theme.
So you mentioned the organ as accompanying this last piece. Is there any other instruments? Are there any other instruments?
We're also going to have a violinist.
Okay.
We're doing this wonderful, I forgot to mention one other piece we're doing by, so remember I was talking about Ursula von Williams?
Yes.
And we're doing a piece by her husband, Ray von Williams as well, called Serenade to Music. I forgot to talk about that one. And that's really interesting. That was a piece that was written to celebrate the 50th anniversary of a famous conductor's service to his organization. And Von Williams, they basically got the 16 best or most famous oratorio singers in England at the time together. And so this piece is written for 16 soloists. And each person in the choir basically gets a little solo, and then they also sing together as a choir and whatever. But it has this beautiful solo violin part. So we're going to have a violinist playing on that one, and as well as the music of the spheres, the Abus Harmonies, the music of the spheres has also an obbligato instrumental part that the violinist will play. So in this concert, you'll hear the choir accompanied by the organ on a couple of pieces, with the piano and with a violin. So it's going to be, it's going to be nice.
Wow, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
I love, you know, you always put such work into these concerts, and I love the thought process behind this one in particular, because I think it really just shows your passion for not just the, you know, the music part, but the lyrics, the verse, and how that fits so well into the music. When you plan things like this, what do you hope the audience goes away with?
Oh, that's such a good question. So something I've been thinking about a lot lately, I'm not sure where this thought's going to go exactly, fair warning in advance, but something I've been thinking a lot about lately is like how music, or the more broadly the arts in general, actually make the world better, or, you know, improve the world. And, you know, I think the power of the arts, unfortunately, has been sort of weakened by a lot of really well-intentioned sentimentalizing about its power. And so we get these, like, you know, sort of cliches and platitudes about music, sort of like, oh, you know, music is a medicine, or music will heal the world, as though you could just like take your cello and walk out into a war zone and, like, you know what I mean, and play.
Seen videos about that.
Yeah, and like play. I understand the wish for some sort of like quick fix thing like that, where you could really just like take a beautiful painting into a war zone, or take a musician into a war zone, and that's just going to make it all go away. And for me, you know, I've been thinking a lot more about that, and sort of, well, what does, because I do truly believe in the deepest parts of my being that the arts, you know, music and poetry and fine art, painting and all of this, it does improve life. Mm-hmm. But I think it's in ways that we don't necessarily, it's not like glitzy and glamorous, you know, it's not just like I say, these sort of like one-off ideas. It's the ways in which the arts encourage us to look more deeply within ourselves and challenge ourselves to understand the source of that art. You know, like when someone's created something, they're trying to communicate something, you know, and at its best, I think music and the arts, the other arts, they wake us up to the shared humanity that we, I think too often in this day and age, we lose track of that. We stick people into pigeonholes about ideas and thoughts and identities and all these things. Like, we're constantly being divided, you know, based on thoughts and ideas and identities and all these sort of superficial things. And we lose track of the fact that fundamentally, like, we're living in this just unfathomable mystery, you know, and none of us knows anything ultimately, mm-hmm. you know? And I think the arts, at their best, they call us back to that sort of space of unknowing in a way that nothing else we have really does, you know, because we're always dealing on the day-to-day level with just like getting through the day. It's like you have to do the practical things, you know, you have to cook and clean and have a shower and go to work and pay the bills and all this, and we get really bogged down in the day-to-day and sort of these superficial sound bites about politics and everything, and we're just living on a very superficial level most of the time. This sort of art, the music that like the choir and I try to provide people or try to bring into the world, I don't claim that you're going to come to this concert and walk away, you know, suddenly healed of all your ills or whatever, but for an hour you're invited to like exist on a different plane. And that is medicine in some way, and it might not be obvious at first, but that seeps, that in my experience as someone who spends a lot of time with these great these great works of art, like the organ music I've learned and the piano music and all the, you know, I love going to concerts myself and taking in other people's performances. And I just find that it does change you. It does, it invites you to a deeper level of engagement with your life. And, you know, something we don't talk about enough, I think, in North American culture, especially, is how art should challenge you. You know, a lot of us think we want to go and, you know, when something bad has happened in the world or something, we want to go hear something comforting like Amazing Grace or something, you know, that's very familiar to us and comforting. But what I think is equally important is when we expose ourselves to something that maybe at first we don't understand, we challenge ourselves to sit through a concert of, you know, or through a piece where you sort of like listen to it. You're like, I don't think I fully understood that. You know, but for me, the sign of great art is that it invites you into a relationship with it where you have to listen to it or, you know, or a great painting, you have to go see it more than once. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just enough to sort of look at it for a couple seconds and then walk away and think, oh, I got that. It's like you engage with it and it's a relationship over time. And like, what's interesting for me with this music is like, depending on the day that I listen to it or engage with it, it can be a completely different experience because it's an interaction between, you know, something that someone has expressed and then my current state that day, you know? So it's like a whole, it's relationships and it's time and it's such a slower moving, it's such a slower pace than what we're used to moving this day and age, where we're used to sort of like glancing at something for a few seconds, gleaning a very superficial understanding of what it is we've just interacted with and then getting on with our lives and never thinking about that again. Yeah. And this concert, this music, while it is immediately appealing and immediately beautiful, it is like you'll sit there and be like, wow, like this choir just sounds unbelievably beautiful. And the organ and the violin and the piano, it's so beautiful. It's also music that you can listen to for years and cultivate new, you know, aspects of a relationship with it, you know, like, and I'm amazed, like I've conducted some of this stuff many times and I come back to it and I look at it and I'm like, wow, I never thought of that before. I never saw that before. I never heard that before. And that to me is just great art. And I just love what it's capable of. So that's a very long answer to your question. What I would expect people to take away from this is that I hope it is like, a moment of invitation for everyone to just like drop all the thoughts we're all carrying around most of the time and the worries and the, you know, the petty day-to-day stuff we're constantly dealing with. And just for this like hour, you can sort of sink into something that invites you into the very core and the very heart of what it means to be a human being, you know, what it means to be alive. I know that sounds like, that even sounds like trite and cliche to think, to say that, but I actually mean it. We don't often like stop to even realize we're alive right now, mm-hmm. you know, we're so distracted by everything. And so, yeah, so it's a bit philosophical, but it's true. I really think that this does make the world a better place when we stop and reflect for a while and, you know, experience a deeper plane of thinking and existing from time to time.
Yeah. No, I think that that is a beautiful invitation for folks to just stop and have some Sabbath time, really, is mm-hmm. what, you know, as church folks.
Yeah. And it's just, it's so human, you know, like in a time where everything's dehumanized, like we're dealing with all these, like, you know, tweets and social media posts are just so superficial and they're just little sound bites and little clips. They're not human. They're not relational, you know, whereas listening to a music or listening to music where you have like a, especially a live performance where you have these human beings in front of you filling a room with the sounds of their voices. Like how intimate is that? Like when you stop and think about it, right? Like that's, it's so beautiful and so human and it's just, it's so countercultural nowadays. Like it's such an act of, I don't know, just it's unbelievable that you would just like put your phone down for a minute and actually just sit in a room and listen to acoustic instruments and human voices. You know, it almost just sounds so crazy that we do that now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for offering that to people. I mean, it's just, it is such a beautiful thing that we're able to give to folks in New York City and beyond.
Yeah. We live stream the concert as well. So even, you know, all of our far-flung friends all over the place, we invite you to join us too. And we do really high quality streaming so that you get a good sense of what it's like to be here in person, even if you can't be.
Amazing. Thank you, Ryan, for joining me. And friends at home, we have musical offerings all year. And so no matter when you are listening to this, go to fapc.org/music. And you can see all of the things that Dr. Ryan Jackson and his choir are up to at this point. So thank you again, Ryan.
It's absolutely my pleasure. And we look forward to seeing you there.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Crossroads. Our managing editor is Jamie Staley, and our editors are Vashina Brisbane and Emily Dombroff.